I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Executive Director Nicholas Wyman of the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation, or IWSI America. But first, disability news for the week of March 17, 2025. A new documentary about the long fight for disability rights resulting in the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act will premiere this week on PBS stations. The title of the documentary is Change, Not Charity, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which covers the advocacy that pushed Congress to mandate curb cuts, ramps, and other accommodations to allow people with disabilities access to their communities. The program uses archival footage and interviews with activists, advocates, lawmakers, and other key players, chronicling how the disability rights movement organized and lobbied for the ADA despite vehement opposition. Part of this effort was the famous Capitol crawl, where people with disabilities dragged themselves up the steps of the U.S. Capitol, leading to the 1990 signing of the ADA. The film's director, Jim Lebrecht, has a disability himself and is known for his work on Crip Camp, an Oscar-nominated documentary about the origins of the disability rights movement. Lebrecht said, quote, "I think the message of this film is that civil rights for people with disabilities are just as important as the rights that everyone either has or should have in our society. There was a coming together of many people, disabled and non-disabled people. Legislators from both sides of the aisle came together in a bipartisan fashion. I hope that our film will remind our viewers and those in power that preserving the civil and human rights of people with disability benefits everyone," end quote. The film is narrated by actor Peter Dinklage and will air on PBS March 25th at 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time on American Experience. Last week, the U.S. Department of Education agency said they will lay off about 1,400 employees, calling its workforce in half compared to when Donald Trump was inaugurated in January. Nearly 600 employees have already resigned or retired since that time. The Education Department said that the cutbacks will affect every part of the agency, with some divisions of the department expecting to see major reorganization. However, officials said that they would preserve statutory programs such as formula funding, competitive grant making, and funding for special needs students. According to Secretary of Education Linda McMahon, quote, "Today's reduction in force reflects the Department of Education's commitment to efficiency, accountability, and ensuring that resources are directed where they matter most to students, parents, and teachers," end quote. Trump has pledged to close the Education Department, and McMahon said the workforce reduction is a step toward fulfilling that goal. She said that staff are being retained to ensure that programs like IDEA, which receives appropriations from Congress, don't fall through the cracks. But when asked what IDEA stood for, McMahon said it was only her fifth day on the job. She said, quote, "I'm not sure I can tell you exactly what it stands for, except that it's the program for disabled and needs," end quote. McMahon has plans to return control over education to the states and has proposed moving oversight of IDEA to the Department of Health and Human Services. She will also send the Education Department's Office for Civil Rights, which handles complaints of disability discrimination to schools, to the Department of Justice. Advocates have warned that efforts to disband the Education Department could have a larger than expected impact on 7.5 million special education students. The agency sends billions of dollars in funding to states every year and oversees early intervention for young children with disabilities to vocational rehabilitation. The department is also responsible for ensuring that the civil rights of students with disabilities are protected. According to Marcy Lipset, a special education advocate in Michigan, quote, Trump and McMahon can't eliminate the Department of Education without an act of Congress, but he can suffocate, strangle, and cut this department off at the knees. Secretary McMahon's proposed reduction of an already insufficient staff is nothing more than a gutting of the institution of public education for America's children and their parents, end quote. And finally, the Social Security Administration is reinstating an aggressive policy to recover billions of dollars mistakenly paid to beneficiaries, which could lead the agency to cut off benefits from some people. About a year ago, Social Security decided to cap withholding funds to those who received overpayments at 10%, but the agency will soon begin withholding 100% of an individual's monthly benefits when they were overpaid. Overpayments were mainly because of government errors or failures by beneficiaries to comply with complicated rules, according to an investigation. Sometimes overpayments went unnoticed for years and grew to tens of thousands of dollars before Social Security sought repayment. The Social Security Administration said that it will begin imposing the 100% withholding rate on new overpayments starting March 27th. They also said that there will be no change to beneficiaries with overpayments prior to that date. The change will not affect the withholding rate for supplemental security income overpayments, which will remain at 10%. And that's the news for this week. You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Vicki Nyswander. You're listening to Disability Beat, and I have on the phone today my guest, Nicholas Wyman, who is the president of the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation, who has recently issued a really interesting report that we're going to be learning more about today. Welcome to the program, Nicholas.
Thanks for having me on the program. Thank you.
Why don't we start with you introducing yourself first, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Institute and the work that you do there.
Sure, absolutely. So I started my career after high school. I actually didn't complete high school, and I really learned that I like to learn through using my head and my hands. And so I've really spent the last three decades looking for opportunities for people to get engaged in different styles of learning and meaningful work and skilled work. And fortunately, companies are still, you know, looking to hire people, but there is this very strange gap. And I spend my working days connecting employees to employers, designing workforce programs, and that's really what's at the heart of IWSI America, which is a non-profit, a 501c3 that actually has heritage back to 40 years ago.
And where is the company based?
So we're based in California, mm-hmm. But we have worked internationally through varying arms and projects, and some of the statistics, or some of the highlights, I should say. We've actually graduated over 20,000 young people globally into apprenticeships, mm-hmm. and we're very excited to share some of that knowledge and that information, and we've got a lot of information contained in our latest report, particularly working with people with disabilities, helping them to, you know, find dream careers. And the message to employers is why it pays to hire people with disabilities.
So how does this, does the Institute often issue reports like this, and are it's not all disability related, is it?
No, it's not, but it really is where we're spending the majority of our time and focus. We also work with youth apprenticeships across the country. But I suppose the inspiration for this report and all our reports is we want it to be a practical read. Mm-hmm. My father was an academic. I'm not an academic. He's no longer alive. But he always felt that I had a he really described me as a practitioner. So our reports are written from a perspective of an employer or a parent or a community group or even an individual. There's not a lot of technical references. It's designed to be a very practical and useful guide. And we're constantly updating it, and we'll be updating the online version with all sorts of links. And we tackle some of the issues which seem, not insurmountable to a lot of people, but it is definitely stopping employers from actually hiring people. They have these biases. Most of them are actually not conscious. Some might be biases. Some might be misconceptions about things like, but how am I going to, get the people to work, or how am I going to deal with this, or how am I going to fund accommodations in the office? So we tackle a lot of those issues. We also look at terminology, but we really try and lead through example of others. So one thing common about all our reports is we feature stories of individuals and companies who've done innovative and interesting things to really move opportunities forward for individuals and also for the movement of engaging people with disabilities in meaningful work.
It sounds really, really fascinating. So did this start with a survey? Where did you get the information that you gathered for this report?
So we actually spend a lot of time with employers, and we operate some programs with the Department of Rehabilitation in California. And so we've got a lot of interaction with employers, employer groups. And so a lot of the information is coming to us from frontline conversations.
Mm-hmm.
We also undertook some survey work, but it really is very much an experiential report, learning through experiences of others. And it's fantastic when, people would like to, tell their story and break down some of these myths and misconceptions. And one thing that was, I suppose, a bit daunting when we started thinking about it was how the whole idea of technology can play a role in assisting. And so there's a great section in there on virtual reality and how that can help solve the training gap. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, a lot of companies, we've got to remember that while this has been going on, we went through COVID where people started using different forms of technology to train. Mm-hmm. And so we're making sure that we've got the latest cutting edge training, be it through a private training provider, a community college, even higher education. There's so many different ways that you can incorporate training into our programs.
Yeah. So what are some of the discoveries that you made that were first of all, the things that you expected to hear, but also some of the things that weren't expected?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things that I've always had in my subconscious, and we've actually done something about this. When I started on this journey over a decade ago, I realized that we were working with so many people, particularly in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, and they just had not successfully made that school-to-work transition. So One of the areas of focus, we've just launched a new initiative in California called Career Launchpad, and that's really going to be helping school leavers with a disability to launch rewarding careers. And we'll be able to offer not only some technical support and career advice, but some practical experiential learning, so summer camp, and all sorts of ways that people can actually get a taste for what it's like to work in a particular industry. So that was something that I did notice and always wanted to do something about. And I must say, I used COVID to really think about how we could get that message out. You know, things that I was expecting or common things that I hear from employers. Sadly, I have a lot of people who say, Nick, I really love what you do. It's fantastic. What an amazing initiative or what amazing programs and projects, but not for our company because, and they start with this long list of why not. And I actually really like that as a place to start the conversation, because whatever the barriers are, whatever the reasons are that you know, employers are potentially leaving huge you know, numbers of available people sitting on the sidelines. There's all this talent, yet every other day we hear about employers struggling to find people to fill jobs. And I've really drilled into that in the report and said, well, you know, why is that? And I think one thing that probably frustrates me a little is the status quo in a lot of companies that you say, but why is that a requirement of this particular job or this function?
Mm-hmm.
And the person looks at you and says, oh, because sort of that's how it was when I got here.
Exactly.
And you start to drill backwards and go backwards. There's actually no logical reason. So I really love working with employers who are open-minded and, you know, realize that, that I suppose COVID was an opportunity to, as a contextual marker, draw a line in the sand and say, let's think of a different way to bring people into our organisation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of companies are talking about diversity and inclusion, and you know, I really like to see those that you know, really commit and commit through a program. And you know, it was really interesting in one of the news stories that I just heard. You know, really kind of resonates with me about wonderful programs that through lack of funding just see. So one of the things that, you know, we try to build into our programs as far as possible is sustainability and look at all, you know, look at different ways that we can actually fund and support and substitute. So they're not just reliant on one funding source. I know that's not possible for everyone, but it is such a shame when you see a wonderful program stop through lack of funding.
Yeah, it is a shame. So without going into great and gory detail with the barriers, let's just kind of identify some of the most common things that employers will say to you to, you know, stop you in your tracks.
The first, as I mentioned, quite often it is a discussion about you know, transportation. It becomes a very kind of logistics focused conversation. It immediately goes to that sort of conversation. And I, you know, listen for a little bit and then I'd say, no matter what the barriers are, list them all for me, list all your concerns. And let's work out a way to work our way around that. And I really have enjoyed working with the DOR in California, and so refreshing when you're working with agencies who have a similar mantra, which is whatever the issues are, let us know and we'll find a way. I had someone call me just recently about a potential program with veterans with a disability, and there was a you know, fairly significant issue in sort of transitioning. And I didn't know the answer, but I did know of where to get the answer from. I know some folks at a public policy institute in DC and was able to talk to them. So through networks, you can always work through these issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the first step is actually getting employers to start the conversation. So that's one example. I think there's another misconception companies don't have. They try and describe to me they don't have the resources or the structure to supervise and manage. And I really, once again, I start to come back and say, well, it really depends on the type of program that you'd like to run. So recently we talked to an organization in CNC machining, and what we realized is that they had fairly, fairly significant high turnover of employees. Mm-hmm. And it turned out by implementing a mentoring program that really is a great benefit to the employee. But from an employer's perspective, it's actually smart because it's actually protecting your investment, because we don't just want to get people jobs, we want them to keep the job. So mentoring is probably something that I'd recommend to everyone listening, particularly, employers. If you're thinking of designing a program, I wouldn't implement any program unless it had some sort of mentoring, and preferably some sort of external mentoring, not just the supervisor, somebody who the employee can talk to and work through issues just while they're getting settled in.
All otherwise known in the field as a natural support.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. But isn't it interesting how quite often things that are fairly intuitive, everything gets so complex, if you know what I mean. And so there's, if you look in the report, I'd say there's nothing in there that hasn't been discussed or hasn't been discovered. There's no secret sauce, as it were. What it really is just getting logical things and sequencing them in a certain way. And I think, the power of working with communities and community organisations, partnerships is something that we really talk a lot about in the report, mm-hmm. and in our day-to-day life. That's a great way to, achieve success.
So before we run out of time for this, I want you to answer the question, why does it pay to hire people with disabilities?
The absolute answer to that is that employers have promising projects sitting on the shelf, and they're saying, we can't find people with the skills we need. Having a skilled and trained workforce, and particularly tapping into huge, vast talent pools with people sitting on the sidelines, makes economic sense. It's good for business. It's good for our community. It's great for the economy. And if any employers wanted to reach out to me, my Twitter handle is Nicholas_Wyman. I'd love to get a direct message, or people can find us at IWSIAmerica.org, where these reports are available at no cost. And even if it's just pointing someone in the right direction, we've got a lot of people around the country, a lot of networks who can really help you, whether you're someone looking to start a skills-based career or whether you're actually looking to hire somebody with a disability. No matter what the challenge is, we'd love to hear from you. And no matter which part of the country you're listening to this in, the first step forward is just reaching out to us, and we'll see what we can do. But it really is just, as you know, it's just about this sense of well-meaning work. There's a lot of organisations who I appreciate, offer employment opportunities. We're really raising the bar and saying we want to look at this vast array of careers and opportunities. And just to finish with one example, Southern California, we've just launched a program. It's an apprenticeship program, an earn and learn apprenticeship program. And we've placed about, I think we're sitting on 60, this has only been running for a year, but 60 people into full-time apprenticeships. Our target is 100, to create 100 apprenticeships. And they're in medical and pharmaceutical in Orange County. So we've picked one region, one industry, and we've got some fantastic occupations there. Dental technicians, medical billers and coders, all sorts of massage therapists. We have some vision-impaired people who are actually undertaking massage therapy, and we'll end up working in hospitals, mm-hmm. Within the region. So there's so many wonderful career options. So you know, I really hope that, you know, that employers say, wow, I didn't realize there's just so many options available.
Yeah. And just breaking down those barriers and getting employers to know that it's not about disability as this thing. It's not a cloud out there that you have to deal with every yes. kind of disability there is. It's this person, this one person yes. who has the characteristics and the talents and the abilities that can succeed on this job.
Yes, absolutely. And I, you know, with that, there's I was at a panel of four younger people. They're probably in their 20s, and one of the apprentices from the Ready, Willing, and Able program, Joy, who's just recently started an apprenticeship as a medical biller and coder. There was probably 100 business people in the room, and these four young people had everybody absolutely on the edge of their seats when they were talking about all the amazing things that they're doing every day. There was one gentleman who was had something to do with, he was some sort of machining type of apprenticeship where he was actually making components for a piece of a telescope that was launched into space. Just incredible stuff. And I think it really is very much all about, as you say, about the individual. And I think that, you know, it's a great place to start. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me today. Nicholas Wyman, president of the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation. You're doing great work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the program. Really enjoyed it.
No problem. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. Down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
Programming on WEFT is brought to you in part by Martinelli's Market in downtown Champaign. Whether you're looking for breakfast, lunch, dinner, or catering, you can't go wrong with locally sourced, freshly prepared meals at Martinelli's. Open 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. on Sunday. Martinelli's Market in downtown Champaign.
We have a couple of minutes to do another announcement before we start Food Sleuth Radio. If you have an old car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you'd like to get rid of, you can donate that old vehicle to Charitable Adult Rides and Services and designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. All you need is a clear title, and Charitable Adult Rides and Services will pick it up and haul it away with no charge to you. You can make arrangements on their website at careasy.com or call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. Remember to tell them that you want WEFT to receive the proceeds. And with all the repairs that we have coming in that are needed in our transmitting system, it will be much appreciated. Thanks very much, and stay tuned for Food Sleuth Radio in just a moment. Oh, by the way, you are tuned to WEFT Community Radio for East Central Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. And we're glad to be here for the last almost 44 years. And here is today's episode of Food Sleuth Radio.
Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hemmelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And today I'm honored to welcome my guest, Dr. Carol Cardona. She is a professor and endowed